Welcome to Primrose Lane Podcast 12, the actual paranormal events that inspired the making of the psychological thriller film Primrose Lane and the continuing episodic series The Passage. I'm the filmmaker Kathleen Davison, and I'm joined here in studio with two paranormal specialists, Chris Turner and Pamela Beatty.
Hello.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hello. If you're just tuning in, please stop. Go back to the beginning. This is a serial story we're telling you, and we don't want to spoil it for you. So you can go back to the previous episodes. If you're on Facebook, go to Primrose Lane Movie on Facebook. And if you go to the comments below this link, you'll find all of the other episode links. Thank you for joining us again. So we cut off in our last episode with Chris Turner talking about your investigation, and unfortunately we're giving the tiniest of highlights of it because it was actually hours in duration.
Yeah.
So I want to jump back in. Let's go to the experience that you had in the dining room. This was investigator Julie and Chris were investigating, again doing one of these flashlight experiments where he had already secured that they had an intelligent conversation going. He'd done a scientific battery of turn the flashlight on, turn the flashlight off. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we're assuming that you have already watched the movie, and I remember the marble.
Mm-hmm.
We actually used the marble as a trigger object.
And let me interject really quickly, because I don't think we've covered this yet.
Oh.
The marble that we call the hero marble in the movie, which opens, and the first time you see it, it's the white marble, and it appears several times in the film itself. That marble we actually found in the backyard. We dug it up in the backyard. And so we believe that it belonged. And Pamela, you're here, so we can use you to tap into this.
Channel
for us. We found this white marble that seems to be about Civil War era. It's a handmade marble. And we assumed that it probably belonged to the children of the original owner. Pamela, do you have any read on that?
Hold on. I got to go back in time.
It's okay.
I'm getting in my time machine. I don't think it was the kids.
Hmm.
I'm seeing it as, what's a railroad got to do with this?
Well. The railroad has a lot to do with it. The original owner of the home helped develop the rail system.
Mm.
And at the point that the house was constructed, the rail line ran right up to the home.
It's got to do with it, because it wasn't a child. It belonged to, because this man showed me, it's almost like a collector's item.
Mm.
This man showed me him getting on the railroad, and he had, was it small enough to put in the pocket?
Yes.
Okay. Because he showed it to me as he was pulling it out of his pocket, and apparently there were other things, so it wasn't a kid's marble at all.
Oh, interesting. So it was just a passenger on the train who mm-hmm. lost his marble.
He was lost.
Lost. You're not the only one who lost his marble in that house.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's come back to Chris's experience. So you're conducting the light, and you're using the marble as one of the test objects.
Absolutely. Sometimes we use trigger objects, and that pretty much assists us with trying to create a familiar environment for the spirit that is at the location. It's kind of like a stimulant to make them come out, make them feel more comfortable, to open up with you.
And so, throughout the night, you had success in the marble actually moving mm-hmm. of its own
yeah.
accord. During.
Ooh, can I say something?
Yes, please do.
Okay. It wasn't originally the kids, but the little boy just told me that he did play with it, so he doesn't want you to think that this wasn't something that he touched. It was.
Okay.
It was very much a part
so
of
he
his.
He was the one yeah. You're saying played with it as
yeah.
in current time as Chris was.
Yes. Yeah,
he was the one who was.
But it wasn't his marble technically. But
okay.
he said, "Yeah, it was me. I was playing with it." So
okay.
he wanted to make that clear.
Okay, well, that ties very well into the story that Chris is about to tell. So
yeah, absolutely. So we use this tactic quite often, and then we used trigger objects. In this case, we used the marble that was in the movie, and we had placed it in the family room. I believe we placed it on a toy or something. And my case manager and I at the time had walked into the dining room area where I had a couple other pieces of equipment that were responding to us. And typically, I am really straightforward with my questioning. I don't deviate too much as far as gender and age and stuff goes. But in this case, it was quite odd because during the session, I asked, are you a woman or are you a boy? Typically, I would say, are you a woman are you a man? Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I asked if you're a boy, or if there was a boy there.
And to be clear, because you referenced the movie, mm-hmm. none of the investigators had seen the movie. They have now since seen the movie, but at the point of the investigation, they had not read the script, seen the movie. They did not know what that storyline was.
That was part of our investigations. We didn't want to hear or gain any type of influential information at all. So just going off of some of the information during the walkthrough notes, that questioning came up. And when I asked if it was a boy, the marble rolled down the toy, and the flashlight turned on in the dining room area. Now, at the same time, we didn't hear it, but after reviewing the evidence, you clearly hear a voice saying, "I'll turn on the flashlight."
Mm-hmm.
So you have. That's so cool. So what's very special about this is, coming from a scientific background, one thing is, it could be questionable. Two things, it kind of solidifies some of the activity. But when you have three occurring influential occurrences happening at simultaneously, that's really cool. And mm-hmm. that's like the holy grail besides actually seeing or, you know. So that was a really great experience.
Now, I want to jump to another event during that investigation. As I shared in the previous episode, when we were tapping in with the flashlight play with the woman upstairs, I felt touched on my groin, and I initially felt embarrassed to share it. It felt so personal and violating.
Yeah, it could be a personal thing.
But then later in the evening, I came to find that two of the other women, Crystal and Julie, because we had separated as teams, and so we had different team configurations at various times throughout the evening. And at one point, those two women were investigating together, and they also were touched in inappropriate parts of their body. And when they shared that, I had the courage to come forth and say, wow, that happened.
Which we have on video.
Yeah, that happened to me too. And what we have on video is after we had shared that we all had been touched, those two women were investigating in the guest bedroom, and they were discussing this event. And as they're discussing it, a flashlight goes on. And they turn and they acknowledge that the flashlight is now responding. And they say, "Was that you?" And the flashlight goes off. And then you caught in the audio recording a man's voice saying, "Yeah, it was," or "Yeah, it was me." I can't remember exactly what it said, but it was one of those two. Anything more that you want to add to that? Or Pamela, are you, because it became a cohesive thing. And Crystal, who was, again, this is immediately following, I'm in recovery from a brain surgery, and she was living in the home at the time, sleeping in the master bedroom, and she was functioning as my, you know, taking care of me. And in her time there, which was 3 months, she had quite a few experiences, and one of them was this recurrent experience of what felt to her a very dark entity that was kind of sexual in nature, and always this inappropriate feeling violated. And it's also piggybacks on, if you go back in episodes when we talked about the art department gal who spent the night in the kids' room one night and felt that a dark entity hovered over her, and she had a sensation of being violated. Chris and Pamela, I'll turn to Chris first. Is there anything more you want to...
Yeah, I know we've been discussing in these segments regarding the flashlight activity and stuff. And I want to make it perfectly clear that that is not a fundamental, singular piece of equipment that we base any findings off of. We consider that maybe a platform of a stimulant to open communication, but we use other pieces of equipment as well, like trigger objects and music and, you know, toys and stuff like that. So I know we've been discussing a lot about the flashlights coming on and responding, but in this case, it was really irrelevant because of the fact that, you know, they were responding quite accurately, along with...
You said I thought you said irrelevant. You said it was really relevant.
No, it's definitely relevant because it wasn't just the flashlights. We were getting voices, we were getting sounds, we were getting other things that could collaborate with the flashlight. So I just don't want the audience to think that all we're doing is the flashlight. That was just probably one of the contributing stimulants in our sessions, But we were also using a lot of other equipment.
And I just have to point out, in case anybody out there has experienced this and they feel it all the way I do, it's hard for me to reflect back on this because I remember so clearly, even as this happened and I'm hearing all the accounts, I've heard the recording of the man's voice validating that, I've seen the video recording of the flashlight going on, there was still a skeptic, screaming skeptic in me trying to deny that it happened.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Pamela, did you have anything you want to add about this particular entity or our refusal to mentally bow to and accept when we experience this stuff?
Yeah, I think it's easier to accept it isn't true, I think, for most people than to accept it is true because they don't want to think they're crazy.
And especially if they're veering near your lady parts. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, and they don't want to think, you know, you don't want to think you're crazy and you don't want to think you're making it up. And what I have found over the years when I first started doing this, that's all I thought. Well, hey, I think I'm making this stuff up, but I'm going to tell you what I'm hearing, and I'm going to tell you what I'm feeling, I'm going to tell you what I'm seeing, but it doesn't mean I believe it. I mean, it's just to get it out, just to regurgitate what you're feeling is so in and of itself validating. And if you don't tell someone that this thing is going on, you're not going to get validated by it. Like, telling me and telling them what had happened gave you validation. And we all need validation and we all need confirmation. You're not going to get better at dealing with the spirit world if you don't get that validation and confirmation. That is the big thing. Now, the guy, this spirit, and I bet you a lot of people, especially women, have experienced this, but I have a male friend that also felt that way, that he was being held down. And it's, you can look it up on the internet. There's so many stories about ghost sex, it's not even funny. But what they are doing, they're not, you know, they're not really having sex with you. They are manipulating the energies in your sex organ so it feels like you're having sex with them. But they're not technically, in my humble opinion, literally having sex with you because they don't have anything to have sex with.
This guy was mostly foreplay. It wasn't the sensation that he was having sex. It was that he was getting near parts that he had no business.
Yeah. Well, he was just a dirty old man. That's who this spirit was.
I also want to interject just a little bit and say this is as physical this may be, it's also as psychological influencing as well. We've had a lot of people psychologically having to deal with this along with physical.
Well, then you not only feel, especially if you're a skeptic, you not only feel sort of this confusion and shame that you think you have a sense that something happened to you that you can't explain. It's also when it gets into this kind of sexual realm of things, there's an additional layer of shame and an additional reason for you not to share the experience.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when you should share it. Mm-hmm. It's just like everything else that is psychological. Anything you hold on to that is shame, the truth will set you free.
Absolutely.
Because when you talk about it, it releases.
And that is one of the reasons why in our preliminary questionnaire, we want our client to indulge. We want our client to open up to us. And remember, all this information is confidential. Nobody gets to see it or read it.
Unless Kathleen makes a movie.
Yeah, exactly. In the credits, right?
And to be very clear, again, I will remind you, the investigation was in no way meant to be tied to the film.
No,
what became mind-blowing was how much the findings overlapped. And we'll talk even more in the next episode with the reveal about that. But the intention was purely personal. For the way that our family and particularly our kids were being impacted. The fact that we're here now and we're talking about it in conjunction with the film is an unexpected byproduct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. The investigation by any means was not influenced by the film at all.
I mean, that's what was so cool.
Yeah.
I got mine, you got yours, and Kathleen wrote the film. and they all match.
Yeah,
all
and that is a awesome experience.
But we're going to talk about the most awesome of that interconnectivity in the next episode when we address the reveal, where we have the round table, where we sit down with both investigative teams and the homeowner, the residents and home dwellers, and we'll see how much overlap there really was. Tune in next week. You can find us at Primrose Lane Movie on Facebook. Please, please like the Facebook page, not just the post. That'll bring us to you even faster in theaters in 2016. You can find Pamela at thehollywoodsage.com, and you can just search Chris Turner and find where He is
everywhere. He's everywhere.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.